Does human life matter? Many today think the answer is no. The idea that human life is intrinsically valuable is dying, says author and intellectual historian Richard Weikart. He traces the dangerous trends in Western thinking that could spell what he calls the death of humanity. In his new book, The Death of Humanity and the Case for Life, CSC senior fellow Richard Weikart traces the roots of this attitude that humans are just advanced apes wearing clothes. It will probably not surprise anyone that Darwinism played a key role in this development. The book provides many shocking examples of the dehumanizing tendencies that flow from the Darwinian human is just another animal mentality. Those consequences, as Weikart explains, are coming home to roost, and they could be truly frightening. The Death of Humanity, written by Richard Weikart and released by Regnery Press, is now available online at Amazon.com and most other bookstores. Be sure to get your copy of The Death of Humanity by Richard Weikart.
Hello and welcome. This is Todd Butterfield for ID the Future. Today, we're fortunate to speak with Dr. Richard Weikart, professor of history at California State University Stanislaus. He's written several books, the newest of which we're going to talk about today. Greetings, Dr. Weikart.
Great to be here.
I'm excited about what you've done in your new book. It's just so deep and rich, and it's going to be a very fulfilling discussion we're about to have. The book's called The Death of Humanity and The Case for Life. You've written books on the negative results of Darwinism and evolution in a book called From Darwin to Hitler and another one called Hitler's Ethic. Where does your new book take us that the other books did not in general?
The new book actually is much broader in its scope. It does discuss the issues of Darwinism and evolution and evolutionary ethics and eugenics, but it is much broader than that. It covers just about every major secular ideology since the Enlightenment period, and shows how they have undermined the Judeo-Christian sanctity of life ethic, thus leading us into a culture of death that we're in today, where we have easy acceptance of abortion, infanticide, assisted suicide, euthanasia, etc.
Well, so many folks who are familiar with ID the Future podcast, as well as the websites that are affiliated, may be leaning toward a science point of view, and they would be interested in what scientists have to say and digging down into the depths of, let's say, biology or those sorts of things. What's the advantage of you as an author, as part of this discussion of origins, et cetera, being a historian rather than a scientist?
Well, for one thing, I show why these issues are so important and why they're so polarizing in our society, because they make a real difference in human life. It's not just some ethereal idea that is of only academic interest. It's a really, as I say in one of my pieces that I've written about my book, it's a matter of life and death, these issues that are playing themselves out. Darwinism gives us a philosophy about what the meaning of life is, what the meaning of death is. And so I'm able to sort of take a step back and look at the history of that and explore the philosophy. And my book does examine a lot of different biologists. I discuss Richard Dawkins, Jerry Coyne. So I do discuss a number of biologists and their views about the human life and what the meaning of human life is. And that's just a few of them. But I discuss many other biologists as well in my book.
Right. What I like is the fact that you, in a sense, are taking a top view of all of the developments of science and philosophy, how they intertwine. And obviously, you're leaning toward where those ultimately would lead the outcomes, as it were. Well, I want to delve a little deeper now. And just, again, I'm trying to paint the picture for those who are kind of new to the topic. Somewhere in your book, you mentioned there's potentially a little difference between Darwinism rather than just Darwin's writings in and of themselves, Darwinism and Darwinists. Is that worth explaining?
Well, Darwin's own ideas, of course, get taken in a number of different directions by other people after that.
Right.
But there's also differences between what people call Darwinism and just sort of believing in evolution in general, too.
Gotcha.
So Darwinism is the idea, especially in its what we think of today as the neo-Darwinist paradigm, is the idea that all of biological organisms have come about through a combination of chance events proceeding according to scientific law, completely according to natural explanations. So that would be sort of Darwinism in the technical sense of the term. Evolution could be proceeding along other lines. In fact, there are some people who are intelligent design people who themselves believe in some kinds of evolution. So the word evolution and Darwinism could be divorced in this kind of context here too.
Okay.
What I'm doing in my new book, In the Death of Humanity, I'm usually looking at those that are insisting on a naturalistic kind of explanation for humanity. So I talk about in the first chapter, the history of materialism and positivism and how those have impacted our views about human life since the Enlightenment period. And then the second chapter, I deal with more Darwinism explicitly, where I talk about how many, in fact, by the way, the first chapter is entitled Man the Machine. So I show how materialist and positivist explanations for the cosmos have led us to view humans as just being machines. The second chapter sort of deals more specifically with Darwinism, where I talk about how Darwinism has driven us to a position where many people see humans as nothing more than animals, just like any other animal. And so there's a lot of this drive that really devalues human life because, after all, we're no better than any of the animals.
Can we go back to chapter one then, man, sure. The machine? And what are some of the historical highlights you'd like to hit about scientific materialism, its beginnings? Does it have ancient beginnings? Is it more recent?
Well, materialism goes back at least to the Greeks. But there isn't a lot of continuity directly from the Greeks through historically, because, of course, there's intervening periods where many people are still religious. Christianity becomes dominant within Europe and such. But in the period after the Renaissance, and especially once you get to the Enlightenment period in the 18th century, there was an upsurge of materialism that has continued on into the 19th and 20th, non-21st centuries as well. And these materialist views have basically tried to construe humans as being nothing more than machines. In the 18th century, there were some prominent figures like Julien de la Mettrie, who's one of the key figures, also Helvetius, a key figure in the Enlightenment period, who were pushing these ideas about humans. And one of the things that they do, and I bring this out in the third and fourth chapters also to a large extent, is they explain humans as being nothing more than explicable through natural causation. So all of our behavior, everything we do, according to these materialist thinkers, going back into the Enlightenment period, everything that we are is simply a product of either our biology or our environment. And some materialists would lean toward one explanation and some might lean toward the other, but essentially they're left with nothing other than one or the other of those, or some combination of those two things. So then over the course of the 19th century, materialism became even stronger, especially by the mid-19th century. In Germany especially, there were a number of scientific materialists who became very prominent and began pushing their scientific materialist kind of views. And then, of course, in the mid to late 19th century, we have then sort of the fusion of materialism with Darwinism, because a lot of materialists embraced Darwinism very rapidly if they were already a materialist before Darwinism came on the scene, or many people became converted to materialism through Darwinism as well, not just in the 19th, but also in the 20th centuries as well. So in the 20th century, then we also have a uptick in materialism, especially toward the end of the century too. And of course, today you've got many prominent scientific materialists, Richard Dawkins being one of the more famous of these, but there's many other ones out there who are pushing for a devaluing of human life. And when I say that, Dawkins, for example, as a materialist, believes that human life does not have any special purpose, no special meaning, no special significance. And so Dawkins himself has said that Darwinism is pro-choice in its orientation, that he thinks that it comes against pro-life kinds of views. And so Dawkins himself has suggested that euthanasia is perfectly acceptable. And he even said at one point, interestingly, Dawkins did, that if he ever was past it, and I don't know exactly what he means by that, but we have an idea, I think, that if he's ever past it, that he hopes that he will be euthanized. So this sort of mentality that humans are just a machine or just an animal drive them toward views that human life is basically cheap.
Do you think the materialist view is on the increase, or just the folks who are strongest about it today are just being more outspoken, more well heard due to their exposure by the various media?
Well, the statistics I've seen do suggest that it's on the upswing, especially in Europe. In the United States, perhaps to some degree, But in Europe, it's actually even much stronger, the uptick in beliefs in atheist and or agnosticism.
Do today's most outspoken materialists or Darwinists believe their views to be morally superior somehow, such as better for mankind?
That's an interesting question because, in fact, many of them do. And if you look at what, especially those that are the most outspoken atheists, say Richard Dawkins or Jerry Coyne or people like this, very often they are arguing that they are morally superior and they bash Christianity as being a religion of the Inquisition and the Crusades, and they get all irate at Christianity for these abominations and atrocities that were committed in the name of Christianity. But they're implying by that, interestingly, a position that is actually contrary to their own worldview, because in their worldview, there is no objective morality that even exists. So it's kind of ironic then that they start moralizing about Christianity when they don't even believe there is any kind of objective morality. What is, according to their kind of worldview, and there's no point moralizing about it, but yet they do. And that's one of the tensions that I point out in my book, that even many of these people who claim that there's no kind of objective morality, that human life has no value, they can't live that way. And they don't even talk that way. They recognize deep down that there is value to human life, one level or another. Again, they might define some human lives as not having value, but they believe that their own life has value, and they tend to believe that a lot of other people's lives have value as well. Let me give one example of this, too. Jerry Coyne, in his book about fact versus faith that just came out last year.
Okay.
Or excuse me, I don't think it's in that book. I think it's elsewhere. But Jerry Coyne at one point made this comment about his support for euthanasia. And maybe it's in that book or maybe it's not. I don't remember where I saw this. But he commented that we give euthanasia to our pets, such as dogs. And so why would we deny that to human beings? You know, because we're qualitatively no better than animals. And he makes this very explicit. But if you look at Jerry Coyne's actual moral views more closely and read more widely in his things, he upholds a lot of morality that's very similar to typical American progressives. And I am quite confident that Jerry Coyne would be horrified if I suggested that we should go around and round up all of the homeless people in some major city, take them away, sterilize them, lock them up until we can find a home for them, and then euthanize them if we can't find a home for them. That's how we treat dogs. He seems to think we should treat humans like dogs, but he wouldn't go along with that. And the reason for that is because he knows that that doesn't make sense. And so my point is to say, yes, Jerry Coyne, that doesn't make sense. And so your whole worldview doesn't make sense.
Let's pick up the conversation there next time. We've been talking with Dr. Richard Weikart, professor of history at California State University Stanislaus. His brand new book, The Death of Humanity and the Case for Life. In our next episode, we'll continue to break apart what the contents are of chapter 1 and 2 and lean a little bit into the rest of the book. Until next time, this is Todd Butterfield for ID the Future.
Does human life matter? Find out in the new book, The Death of Humanity, written by Richard Weikart and released by Regnery Press. The Death of Humanity is now available online at Amazon.com and most other bookstores. Be sure to get your copy of The Death of Humanity by Richard Weikart.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute, 2016. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org or idthefuture.com.